you ready? You want the noise brought on you? Because here it comes.
What?
The noise brought on you? Because here it comes.
Just my job.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
Who's better on this show, you or me?
Eunice, meanus, usness, weenus, yournus, minus, ourness, happiness.
Jeff Lutz.
If I had to choose someone to listen to, I'd choose me. But that doesn't mean I'm necessarily that I'm better. It's just that I find myself better.
You know, when I was just about your age, my daddy said, son, there are three things in life I want you to remember. Number one, no matter how stupid the dealer looks, always cut the cards. Number two, don't ever eat yellow snow. And number three, pay as you go, and you will never owe.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here?
Hello again, everybody. It's a Friday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show on KFH Radio. We are joined today, I am joined today, by the big fella, Anthony. Jeff is out, sick. We don't know what dude is doing, but Anthony is here. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm here on limited sleep.
Limited sleep. Your job beckons you at odd hours?
Well, I worked that third shift, but I felt an obligation to do my podcast this morning when I got home. So I did a
You haven't even been to sleep yet.
I've had probably about 2.5 hours of sleep. I did everything high school, state football playoff scores from last week, games coming up this week, rankings. I did the whole nine.
Where are you going to be tonight? Are you going to be sleeping tonight, or are you going to go to a game?
I'm actually going to go get my grandson, because him and his brother, they like to fight a lot, and I have to instill in them that you guys are brothers. Y'all don't fight each other. Y'all fight with each other. So I'm going to put them to work and make them work
with
each other.
Well, let's hope they don't even fight with each other. Let's hope they just don't fight.
Well, I got some yard work that they can do. Well,
there you go. That
make
could
them
be,
work together.
That could take the fight out of them.
I hope so.
So no game tonight.
If there was a game, man, I would like to go see Derby and Easton. Don't ask me to put no point spread on it.
Don't mess with that anymore.
I'm not gonna mess with that.
Anybody who thinks Derby isn't pretty much going to blow out any team they play.
I mean, last week was the closest game they've had all year, and it wasn't close. It was still 42-14,
and it was 42-0 at halftime.
Right.
So, Derby takes the foot off the gas quite often. And I'm not underselling East. East is a good team. They're a good program. They're a good team. They've had a good year. No, you're not going to do it at Derby.
Matter of fact, there's a slew of games I wouldn't mind going to, even in 8-man. But you look at 3-A, I wouldn't mind going to see Andel Cheney. But
you'd be one of the million people who are going
to
be.
But I would have to be there like right now.
Yes.
To get a good seat.
And that's, of course, a rematch of last year's game in the semifinals. I'm sorry, the West Final.
Right.
Cheney won that game, their second straight comeback win over Andale last year. They haven't played in the regular season. They didn't play in the regular season this year. Cheney has lost the game, but they got revenge loss
right.
last week by beating Collegiate. Andale hasn't had a close game. I think outside the box. I'm a marketing guy that's how I think. And I understand Andale Derby might be a mismatch in some ways, but wouldn't you love to see it? Wouldn't you love to see Andale play Derby?
I would love to see that, but, you know, there's a story within the story when you look at Cheney and Andale. Andale still gets the number one ranking in Class 3A throughout the year, but yet Cheney was the defending state champion. So I think part of the reason for their loss to Collegiate the first time around is they probably still felt like they were a little bit disrespected. And then they caught Collegiate at the wrong time, because Collegiate had their number and blew them out 31-7. So now they got that revenge game out the way. Now their laser focus is on Andale. And the old saying still goes, to be the man, you have to beat the man. So Cheney is still the defending champion. So you wonder how much of an edge are they going to have going into that game tonight. But you hope they don't have too much edge that they make that one mental critical error and Andale takes advantage of, because Andale's averaging like 58 points a game.
You want me to give you the final score of that game? Is that what you're – yeah, it feels like you're wanting me to do that.
I'm not wanting you, but if you want to, go ahead.
Well, I can give you the Derby East score, and I'll try to give you the Andale Cheney score.
Well, let's hear it. All right. Put it up there on the table.
Derby East.
Derby East. Right? Okay.
45-14.
That sounds doable.
45-14. East will score a couple times because they're really talented. But Derby will again have to kind of ease off. Sorry, that's just Derby this year. That's just who they are. Now, when they get potentially Manhattan, and Manhattan's got to play Northwest tonight, and I'm not just writing Northwest
off. And that's
a
revenge game.
It is, but can you get revenge when you're overmatched?
Well, let's see here. Let's see here. Cheney got their revenge game, and they had to come to Collegiate not once but twice. Well, this is going to be, I believe, Northwest's second trip to Manhattan this year, or did Manhattan come here the first time?
They went to Manhattan.
So they're going back to Manhattan, so they're not going into unfamiliar territory.
Well, I'm going to give you that score, too.
Give me that score then.
All right, here we go. Ready? Derby 42, East 14. Right, I'm going to write these down.
We got that one.
Let me hold on. Derby 42-14. What was that Manhattan? I'm not even going to look it up.
Manhattan,
they won pretty easily against Northwest. Manhattan 31, Northwest 17. Closer game,
okay.
I think Northwest is obviously a legitimate football team. I don't think they can go on the road and beat Manhattan. And then the other game, Andale-Cheney,
mm-hmm.
with all due respect to Cheney, and they built a great program there. Andale 52-20. There you go.
All right. Now I'm going to give you a bonus game. I'm going to make you dig real deep. Eight-man Division II.
I don't follow eight-man very close.
Axtell, 49-game winning streak.
Axtell versus who?
I have to look that up, but.
Well, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that later
in the show. We got a good show, as described. And last night, Wichita State with a win, 79-73 over Northern Iowa at Coke Arena. Again, another good offensive performance by the Shockers, who got a real boost from Corey Washington, who scored all 19 of his points.
Yeah,
in the second half, and just came out with a flurry of three-pointers that really, you know, Wichita State could never really clamp down on Northern Iowa defensively. Northern Iowa had a pretty good night offensively, scoring 73 points, shooting almost 48% from the field. But those three-pointers from Washington,
it really ignited,
helped them build a lead, and they were able to hold on.
Yeah, and in contrast, up northeast of us, how about the Wildcats losing and didn't look good?
And a former Wildcat led the charge and then kind of mocked the Wildcats. He was leaving the court.
Right, Cam Carter and Coleman Hawkins kind of exchanged some nice unpleasantries. They had to be separated. And I came away with this thought. You paid Coleman Hawkins pretty much almost $2 million in NIL money. And thus far, he hasn't really been all that impressive. And the guy that came back and scorched you for 21 points, maybe this guy you should have paid.
Yeah, that may have been the message he was delivering. Who knows?
And I came away with this. I can't believe I'm out talking to you. I shouldn't be doing that. You the star of the show. But looking at the contrast of Wichita State and Kansas State, and I know they play later on, and you need to take things one game at a time. And Paul Mills said the best. He said it's best to learn from my mistakes after a victory than after a loss. But if Kansas State and Wichita State was to play right now, I would feel real good about Wichita State's chances of playing.
Yeah, I don't think Kansas State has gelled. And they got so many new guys. Not that the Shockers don't, but the Shockers have a basis in returning players.
Right.
I mean, when you can throw Bell and DeGray and Beverly and Cortez and Ballard out there, and all of those guys are seniors, you've got a basis of experience. K-State doesn't have that. So by the time they play, I expect K-State to be much better.
But
the Shockers, in my opinion, the Shockers don't have a high ceiling. They're already pretty good, and I don't know how much better they're going to get. They've got all these seniors. I think they're playing well, and I expect them to have a good year, but I don't know that the team we see in February is going to be markedly better than the team we see right now.
Well,
K-State, I think that will be the case.
Well, I'm looking at two more pieces that haven't touched the floor yet, Zane Meeks, T.J. Williams.
Right.
You throw them in the mix. Where they fit the rotation.
How much are they gonna hit the floor with this kind of a senior-dominated team? I don't know. Zion Pipkin's not playing at all. Very highly touted freshman.
Right.
But when you have this level of senior leadership on your team, and it's by design, in my opinion, Paul Mills went out and found this team in the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
He already had a bunch of seniors coming back. He went and got a bunch more. And why? Because Wichita State has to have a good season.
Right.
They have to bring the people back.
Right.
To Oak Arena. And part of that plan is, well, let's load up. This isn't how it used to be in the days before the transfer.
No, you didn't have
nine seniors on a team. That was going to be a disaster for your long-term success as a program.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, when you're just building a team from year to year, doesn't matter what your makeup of underclassmen versus upperclassmen is. Just doesn't matter as much. So guys like T.J. Williams, back in the day, back before the transfer portal, we'd say, well, when he gets healthy, he's going to be, I can't say that. I don't know how much he'll play. That makes sense?
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, which leads to this next question. When it comes to recruiting, and it's like now, it's like you say, Wichita State, they have to win now, this year. Not next year, they have to win this year.
They have to win this year.
As far as recruiting goes, do you still go after the high school players, or do you look more?
Well, they got a commitment from another high school player from the same school that Zion Pipkin is attending.
Right.
And they're very happy about that commitment. They also got a commitment from a guard from Barton Community College,
mm-hmm.
who was part of that national championship team last year. So, yeah, you still got to recruit those players. Because they got, remember now, next year they lose almost everybody.
Right.
So they're going to go into next year with people who haven't hardly played at all.
And that's the thing, man. I kind of cringe because another kid out of Wichita Heights signed with Washburn, a Malachi Wilkins, 6'8" kid. And we're definitely going to need some length on the court. And I'm like, did that one get away? Or is it a situation where now where you see like with the women's program, how they're bringing some of these players back home that's then went
right.
places. Could that be the situation? I mean,
it's going to be completely different in terms of men's basketball and women's basketball. Not that it always hasn't been, but in women's basketball, the transfer portal, while still important, is not vital like it is in men's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Mills is like every Division I coach in the country now. It's not about program. They'll tell you it is. We want to build a year-to-year successful program. But the program is more about what kind of a team are we going to have from year to year. It's a year-to-year thing. Look at KU. Last year, didn't have the right pieces. Didn't fit. Had injuries. Had guys underperform.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they go out in the transfer portal and supplement the three big returnees they have with four guys that they think are going to really make a difference. That's what you can do nowadays that you couldn't do before.
Right. And I think the blueprint is Coach Hurley at UConn. I mean, who would have thought that we'd be saying two-time defending national champions and possibly could they three-peat? He has some type of recipe where he's navigating through this transfer portal and is working. And I wonder if he's providing a blueprint. And I wonder if Paul Mills is –
Well, Paul Mills probably has his own blue. I mean, it looks like he's done a pretty good job this year, right?
Yes,
it
does.
With the returning players, all of them veterans, and the other guys who are getting on the court from the transfer portal, all of them veterans.
Veterans.
You got a bunch of guys who are veterans of the Division I level.
Right. Corey Washington, if I believe, played at St. Peter's. That's the same team that knocked off Coach Cal in Kentucky. They beat him so bad, Calipari to say, I'm through with this. I'm going to Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting mix. You look at last night. Two of the starters, Quincy Bowder, got into foul trouble. But his backup, Bojanak, came in and really had a really good first half.
Yes.
Made a difference. Bijan Cortez only played 16 minutes. I think they got better players than Bijan Cortez.
Justin Hill is...
And those guys kind of showed out yesterday. AJ McGinnis finally did something. Eight points. Xavier Bell didn't shoot the ball well, but he's a security blanket. He's a rock-solid guy. So the Shockers are really interesting to me. And I wish they had a little bit tougher schedule. Because next up is Monmouth on Monday night, and no.
They'll be lucky to get 3,200 people in.
Yeah, they'll get more than that because the team's starting to but even last night with Northern Iowa returning and Mark Turgeon in the crowd to be honored, I only watched on television, but it looked like around 6,000, and they gotta get that place packed again.
It would be packed for if no other game than this game right here. When Kansas State comes
in. It'll be packed for that. There's no doubt.
And maybe if let's say we win that game, maybe we can convert some fans, and from that we can springboard and start seeing more.
Well, we'll see. Fans. We'll see. There aren't a lot of must-see non-conference home games for the Shockers this year. There just aren't.
Here's what we got to do definitely. We got to win that in-season tournament that they're in. They got to win that.
Well, they got Minnesota in the first round, certainly a winnable game. I don't know who is on the other side of that. They've got Florida. Monmouth, and then they go to Kansas City to play St. Louis. Then that tournament down in Florida where they play Minnesota in the first round. At home against Alcorn State.
Yeah, we
East can't. Tennessee State's okay, but I don't know that I'm jumping for joy. They go to Chicago to play a good DePaul team. It looks like DePaul, they've got a new coach.
Yeah.
And, I can't think of his name. But they look like they're going to be okay. Then they have Kansas City at home, nothing. Kansas State at home. And then they play Friends. And then they embark on their American Athletic Conference schedule. That's not a home schedule built to draw big crowds. It's just not.
It's not.
But... we'll see. I like where the Shockers are headed. I think Paul Mills is a good coach. It's interesting to me to watch the roster construction take place because those of us who said back in the day that, you know, back before the transfer portal, we would think that Zion Pipkin and a healthy TJ Williams would be major factors, even as freshmen. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure freshmen are major factors anymore. At this level of basketball?
That depends. But you have to be able to pluck them from those high-level AAU programs.
Right. If they're five-star freshmen, that's right. A different story.
Right.
Or four.
TJ, I think he was a borderline three, four-star. So we were fortunate.
And that doesn't mean he won't be a really good Shocker.
Right.
As soon as next year. It's just that on this year's team, I don't see these young guys... could be surprised, could be proven wrong, but I don't see the young guys becoming mainstays with the way this roster is constructed. Just don't see it happening. All right, we got Max Power back in the studio. We've got the hotline up and running at 869-1240, sponsored by IHOP. We've got the big fella, Anthony, in today, and when we come back, we will talk to Matt Perino. He is a beat writer for the Buffalo Bills. He works for Syracuse.com. Bills and Chiefs coming up Sunday in the marquee game and a marquee weekend of the NFL. I'm sorry, my voice broke. Stay with us. We'll be back on the Bob and Jeff Show, KFH. KFH. Matt Perino joins us from Syracuse.com. He's a beat writer for the Buffalo Bills. They have a interesting big-time game coming up Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs, who are unbeaten at 9-0. Hello, Matt. Welcome to our show.
Hello. How are you?
We're doing well. So, obviously, we're in the footprint of the Chiefs here in Wichita, Kansas. They have figured out a way to win 9 consecutive games. They conceivably could have lost 3 or 4 of those games, but they don't seem to be able to lose. So how does Buffalo pull this off on Sunday?
Well, I think that, you know, these are two teams now that it's kind of morphed the rivalry into kind of a divisional vibe. They play 2 times a year, it seems, every year, because it's regular season, then a playoff game. And the last 4 have been 1-score games. So, you know, the Bills have won 2 of those, and I think the key to victory is finding a way to not beat yourself, number one, because that's what the Chiefs, you know, they do it so many things so well that if you make your own mistakes and allow them extra opportunities, you put yourself in a really tough spot. And then I think from a running game perspective, this is a Chiefs team that doesn't allow teams to run against them. But Josh Allen is a kind of different form of runner. And I think that in the last 2 matchups, he's run 22 times for over 100 yards. He's got to be that force in this game. He hasn't run a ton this season. They haven't asked him to be that most of the time. But in these kinds of games against these kinds of defenses, that's just an advantage that the Bills have that I think they'll lean into that a little bit on Sunday.
Yeah, this is Anthony here. And looking at all the other quarterbacks in the league, you look at Jalen Hurts, and he got Saquon Barkley. You look at the guy at Baltimore. I can't even think of his name, but Lamar Jackson, and they got him a running back in Derrick Henry. But when you look at Josh Allen and some of the weapons that he's lost, and how he has this team playing and rallying around him, wouldn't it be conceivable to say maybe you can put Josh Allen in the MVP talk as well too? Because look like he's doing more with less.
He's definitely doing more with less. I think the problem, it feels like the award comes down. Like, I think Lamar is the MVP right now, just specifically numbers-wise. His team's been at the top of the conference. The problem is, I didn't think Lamar was the MVP last year, but his team finished as the number one seed in the AFC, and I almost felt like he got a little bit of a bump off of that. So who knows if the numbers are kind of close at the end of the season, if the person that doesn't just get the bump is the team that finished first overall. And who knows, like Patrick Mahomes, we've seen it before. If he goes on an absolute tear in the second half of the season, you know, they're getting healthier. You would imagine maybe getting Pacheco back here in the next couple of weeks is going to unlock that offense even more. I can feasibly see that. But, yeah, to your point, I think Josh Allen has definitely put himself in the conversation. And I think there's an argument to be made, a big reason why Lamar won those awards, specifically the first one, felt like he was doing more with less. And I think that means a lot more. When you have Travis Kelce, when you have the offensive line that's built there, that's something that you always think about when you think about Patrick Mahomes. And for a long time with Josh Allen, when you thought about him, your first thought was about Stephon Diggs. And now that's not there anymore, and he's doing it with this collection of players. I think if you polled most NFL fans that don't play fantasy football and told them who's Khalil Shakir, who's Mac Hollins, who's Curtis Samuel, they'd probably be puzzled to tell you. And those have been the big pieces in this offense. Now, the one thing with the Bills' offense is James Cook, he has moments where he's a superstar. They don't lean into that, though. I don't know if that's the body type. I don't know if that's just he's had some drops over the course of his career, but you know, he had a huge game in the regular season game against the Chiefs last year, went for 141 total yards, had that touchdown in the first quarter. I think he's going to be the emphasis for what they try to do in the run game and the pass game on Sunday.
Talking with Matt Perino, Buffalo, Kansas City, the late Sunday afternoon game here on our sister station, KNSS, also, of course, nationally televised on CBS. The Bills started 3-0. Then they played at Baltimore, at Houston. They lost both of those games. Now they've won five in a row again, but not against any playoff contenders. I guess Miami could be somewhat considered, but and maybe Arizona, but not really. So how important is this stretch of games for Buffalo? After Kansas City, they go they're at home against the 49ers. Then they go to the Rams, and then they go to Detroit. How important is it for Buffalo to win some of these games against legitimately really strong playoff teams?
I mean, it's definitely important. It's important to, you know, them wanting to maybe host two playoff games. You know, if the Chiefs win this week, they've got the track to the one seed. They might have it either way. And, you know, the Bills do have a tough four-game stretch here with two losses already on the schedule. You drop two of those, you drop three of those, and then all of a sudden the math starts to change a little bit. So I think, you know, it locally, the big storyline this week is, you know, Josh Allen basically saying that all that matters are the playoff games, right? But this game matters that could determine the where you play in the playoffs. And I think the Bills have played well on the road, but we saw them, to your point, go on the road against Baltimore in week four, and it just not go well for them on either side of the ball. Now, they were without Taron Johnson. That was a huge loss. That was before they traded for Amari Cooper. They're a completely different team when those two things, two players are on the field. And that's why I think it's huge, despite Dalton Kincaid ruled out already for this game, to get Amari Cooper back, which that seems to be where it's trending. It's massive for their offense, because with just Shakir as the major weapon you have to worry about, I think you could put McDuffie on him all day long, and then you don't have to really worry about a lot of the other weapons, the ancillary weapons in the passing game. With Cooper there, you have to change the math a little bit. And so I think they're a different team. I think that they've found ways to win, similarly to the Kansas City Chiefs in games where they haven't played their best on either side of the ball. I think this game specifically is as important as any of the four, because if you win this game, you come back after the bye. Sean McDermott's never lost in his eight seasons after the bye. And you're playing a San Francisco 49ers team that's banged up in their own right. I just don't think they're the same team they've been over the last couple of years. And then on the road to the Rams, they're kind of this Jekyll and Hyde. One week they look like a potential Super Bowl contender, and then the next week they look very beatable and kind of dysfunctional on offense and defensively okay. And then Detroit's obviously that big road game in five weeks. So it's a huge stretch for the Bills.
Matt Parrino, our guest, he's a Bills beat writer for Syracuse.com. I'm curious, Matt, because we obviously live right here in Chiefs country, and they've just had an amazing run, of course, trying to win a third straight Super Bowl. What's the perception of the Chiefs up in upstate New York, and especially within that Bills Mafia group? Is this something they see as, yeah, we can conquer the Chiefs, or do they understand that as long as Patrick Mahomes is around, it's going to be a really difficult task?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of both of those things. Like, you can't be the man until you beat the man. And so I think that there's an understanding that this is the modern-day dynasty, and to eventually be the one to knock them off. And I know the Bengals won a couple years ago, but they didn't go on to win the Super Bowl. So it's not really, you know, they only kind of did half the job. You know, the Bills Mafia wants their team and Josh Allen, who I think a lot of people argue is in that Patrick Mahomes tier as a quarterback, obviously not the accomplishments, but so there's a little bit of both of those things at play. And if you go back over the last couple of seasons, you know, I think it's interesting. The Chiefs defense allowed, not counting the Bills, the other three teams they played in the playoffs last year, four offensive touchdowns. The Bills scored three in their one-score loss to the Chiefs. And so I think this is a team that competes closely with the Chiefs every single year. They've just done enough. Kansas City has 13 seconds, and last year in the playoffs, the missed field goal and, you know, executing down the stretch. They got to get over that hump. And I think that, you know, it's interesting the juxtaposition between the two franchises. Andy Reid, he was kind of on the Sean McDermott path for many, many years in Philly, and maybe early on there in Kansas City before they broke through, and eventually he did. He found a way to break through, and I think that's the great hope that Bills fans have, that having the quarterback, and, you know, I know it's a little bit different because it's a defensive head coach, but potentially a head coach that can get over the hump in his own right, is what keeps them kind of coming back for more, if you will.
And it's so fascinating because while the Chiefs have been very dominant, last year they had a difficult, at times, regular season. And there's so many other good teams in the AFC and so many other good quarterbacks that it's been a lot of fun trying to watch teams try to displant the Chiefs. There's teams that are right there on the cusp, and Buffalo's certainly one of them, yet here the Kansas City Chiefs are still standing. What kind of a game? We expect another really, really close game. What's the weather going to be like in Buffalo on Sunday afternoon?
No weather elements. It's going to be nice. It's going to be probably like mid-50s, little sun, no weather. So this will be a true, test for, these two teams, and we get an idea of where they both stack up. It's interesting, too. It's like all these games, they add up over time. I remember the Brady and Manning era and how many years he spent trying to get over the hump. And it's been this weird thing, like, of course, like, does this game matter? Because, of course, it matters to the Bills are chasing the one seed and positioning. But the really only thing that matters for Josh Allen at this point, he said it himself, is beating them in the playoffs. Until they do that, none of any of this other stuff, like the MVP talk and, winning, this will be their fifth AFC East championship, and it doesn't look like the Jets or the Dolphins are going to threaten in that department. And so you could probably talk about that being the case. And I think a lot of Bills fans would yearn for this era when they didn't go to the playoffs for 17 straight years. But now when you get this close, it's just you want to experience what it's going to be like. And those 90s teams, but Jim Kelly and company never got over the hump either. So it's been about 30, 35 years of torment for this fan base that to get over the hump potentially against Patrick Mahomes and that's the other thing about this rivalry you asked about a few minutes ago. There's a lot of respect underneath all of the, I want to beat the Chiefs. I hate the Chiefs. I hate Patrick Mahomes. I think there's a lot of respect for the players that they have and how they've done it. And I think that through that respect is you want to beat those guys.
Well, very interesting stuff. And what I would say to Josh Allen is, while I agree with him in theory that beating the Chiefs in the playoffs is the ultimate goal, the Bills fan base would certainly like to get this one on Sunday for sure. Thanks, Matt, for spending some time with us.
Indeed. Have a great weekend and enjoy the game.
We appreciate it. Matt Perino from Syracuse.com, longtime Bills beat writer. And, boy, I'm looking forward to that game on Sunday afternoon, 3:25 kick. All right, on Netflix this evening, we have the opportunity to watch 58-year-old Mike Tyson box again. He is taking on Jake Paul. Do we care?
Intriguing is the word.
That's the word I used. Nah, maybe not. Maybe you used it. Who used it?
I do. I used it.
Okay.
And
is it intriguing because of, it's intriguing because of Mike Tyson. That's the only reason it's intriguing. If this was anybody else fighting Jake Paul, it wouldn't be intriguing, right?
Right. But this is 58-year-old Mike Tyson. And back in the day when he was boxing, he used to say, I don't get paid by the hour. Well, I'm pretty sure at 58, he ain't got the win he used to have when he was a young kid boxing, knocking people out.
Well, he's going to go for it right out.
He going for it right away. So, Jake Paul.
And Jake Paul morning, knows that.
Good morning, good afternoon.
You think?
Good evening, night.
You think?
If you thought George Foreman was something in his old age, Mike Tyson going to lay.
All you got to do is run from this guy for a little bit, tire him out, move in, and...
I think Jake Paul is that smart.
I don't know. Now you got me wanting to watch it.
Do you think Jake Paul is that smart? He think he can go toe-to-toe with Mike Tyson.
What time's this thing on Netflix? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, but I think I'm going to actually watch that. You know, I would actually be that one person if I took my grandson to a football game, which most likely would be Derby. If I went, I would probably have my mobile device to have the Netflix app on it, trying to watch the football game and trying to watch Jake watch Jake Paul get knocked out documentary.
Let's look here. 8 rounds on Netflix. I can't find the time.
It won't go 8 rounds.
I just want to know the dang time. Hey, good grief, people. Can we?
316-869-1240. Somebody
please
call us.
This is where my son would be on his phone looking things up for me. No, I don't want you to do that. That's not the expectation for you, my friend. It's the expectation for my son.
Oh, okay.
Who can do that? He has the ability to, with one hand, get on stuff and find it. And I think that's because he's more tech savvy
than, see, I'm 57 years old. He's probably like,
he's only 41. I mean, he's not a pup.
Right.
But he's better at doing that stuff than I am. Now, I've gotten fairly good, but when I'm holding a microphone in my hand, no. It just doesn't happen for me. So the reason I'm asking what time is because in my life now, at the age of 69,
if it's
too late, forget about it.
That fight is saying 5 p.m. Pacific time. And that's another thing I have. Why do they always discriminate against Central Standard Time? We always get Mountain Time, Pacific Time,
Eastern Time. Yeah.
But they very rarely say Central Time. I'm going to file a protest against
that. Well, if that's true, and that fight starts at 7 o'clock Central Time, which I find, well, that'd be 8 o'clock Eastern, and the fight's in Arlington, Texas, so, but there's got to be, certainly there's an undercard.
It's got to be.
So by the time that fight starts to happen, it'll be 9, 10 o'clock, right? They're not gonna have that fight at 7 o'clock. I will guarantee you. So it looks like there are 6 fights
right,
before Tyson and Paul.
Right, because they said this thing's supposed to last like 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, my goodness. It'll be 10 o'clock.
They're just delaying the inevitable that Jake Paul.
I'm sorry, I don't want to see Lucas Body and Corey Marksman.
Never heard of them.
Lightweights fight 10 rounds.
Never heard of them. And maybe that's what they're trying to do. They're using this to try to market boxing, because who do we know in boxing? We probably know more people in MMA and UFC than we do in boxing.
They do have 3 title fights on this card.
Who are they? I probably never heard of
them. The women's super middleweight title is up for grabs.
Never heard of her.
Between Shadacia Green and Melinda Watpool. The men's WBC welterweight title is on the line between Mario Barrios and Abel Ramos. Mm. And the women's junior welterweight championship is on the line between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano.
So you mean to tell me we got more women's titles on the line than we do men's titles?
We do, but at least there's some titles on the line.
How boxing have fallen.
I'll give them that.
Time.
I'll give them. Well, I hear you, but at least there's some titles on the line. So, I mean,
are they even relevant?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a boxing fan. Have you ever been a boxing fan?
See, back in the day, you could rattle off boxers. Sugar Ray Leonard, Leon Spinks, Marvin Hagler, Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali. You could just rattle off boxers, like, real quick. Now, those names you just mentioned, I'd probably have to go to Wikipedia.
Oh, I've never heard of any of them.
Or get a thesaurus or something and try to figure out where they come from. Who are they?
Never heard. There's a middleweight fight, but not for a title. I don't know either of the boxers. There's a featherweight fight. I don't know them. But I guess this does put boxing, for one night at least, kind of in the limelight. There'll be a lot of people tuning into this.
Now, the next question is, how do they promote it from then on? How do they promote maybe, hopefully, their next big star? Because boxing is just, I could put on a pair of gloves now and somebody.
I don't know how they promote it. You've got a title fight coming up in December in Phoenix for the WBO Junior Lightweight title and the WBO Featherweight title. Those are the next title fights. In San Juan, Puerto Rico, there's an IBF Junior Welterweight title up for grabs on December 7th. I'm just telling you what the championship fights are. The undisputed heavyweight title will be decided. Now, that's the big one, right?
That would be the big one.
On December 21st in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury.
Only reason we know Tyson Fury because he ventured into WWE.
Right. But he's had a pretty good run as a boxer.
Right. But they're not even promoting him, and he's supposed to be your heavyweight.
Well, that's coming up in December.
He got more promotion going to WWE than he's getting in boxing right now.
Right. But he is fighting for the title. And there'll be some buzz about that. Whenever there's a heavyweight title.
Key word is some.
Boy, you are.
How do you?
You are down on the sport of boxing, my friend.
How do you sum up some?
I'm not a big boxing guy, but good.
I can't be a big boxing guy because when they're not promoting it, I mean, you need to find somebody that has some personality. I'm not saying go out and get the next Muhammad Ali. No, but get somebody that has some kind of cachet that you can promote around and build the federation around, because they're getting swamped by MMA, UFC, and WWE.
But here's the thing about boxing, and we know so much more now than we used to know about head injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know a lot more. And we saw what happened with Muhammad Ali. We saw how Joe Frazier slowed down. And we know that the pounding they took as boxers had a lot to do with that. So I don't even know how many people are trying to get into boxing anymore. That's how the sport has been decimated. And there's just not widespread interest. But there's widespread interest in Mike Tyson.
Right.
And that's why Netflix will make a ton of money off this show tonight, which has the potential to be an absolute joke.
It does have that potential.
And that's one of the reasons we might watch, right?
Right.
We either want to see Mike Tyson knock this guy into the fifth row, or we want to see Mike Tyson, I hate to say it, be a disaster. No in between. We don't want to see a four-round fight where, I don't know. I predict Mike Tyson gets him early, but who knows?
Mike Tyson going to lay him out in the second round. He's going to get a good feel for him in the first round. He's going to be like, I could have had you. No, I could have had you, sucker, but I'm gonna save you a little bit. I'm going to play around, and I'm going to knock you out in the second round.
Mike Tyson looks to be in fantastic shape, but he is 58.
He is. I mean, well, think about it. Was George Foreman ever in shape in his old years when he was boxing and knocking people out?
Yeah, I mean,
round is a shape, but still.
Those ketchup bottles, tomato cans, as we once called them. All right, time for a break. We'll come back and talk with Joanna Chadwick from Byte Magazine. She's going to be a little earlier in the show today. We got a lot of high school playoff games to talk about. And Joanna is well-suited, her long time covering high school sports. And then coming up at 3:25, Celise Blow from Wichita State Women's Basketball. We continue here on a Friday with Bob Lutz and the big fella, Anthony.